Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hey, everybody. I got it.
No. Sheridan Forbes in our chat says, let's go. It's time, Nation. Ready
We're
for
here.
Redacted. We're here. Good
here
to see
we
you
are.
Guys.
Clayton has what I think is probably some kind of respiratory lingering virus that's going through our house today.
Call the World Economic or World Health Organization. Declare
it
a new pandemic.
If you have been watching us throughout November, you saw that I did several segments, lost my voice, and walked away in a coughing fit.
Yeah.
It's Clayton's turn to do that. We're sharing it. So I'm going to try and, drive here, and hopefully that's okay. What is it you've got?
I got some dog biscuits. No, I got some. I was in Dubai yesterday, and so I got some. I don't know. They gave me in the United Arab Emirates, they handed me these.
Okay.
It's honey with ginger drops. So
all right.
Thank you to the fine folks in Dubai for taking a lot of redacted viewers in Dubai. So
I'm going to let you know that I already tried to broadcast with a lozenge and that didn't work.
What's up, David?
What's that thing that they're saying now that Congress is begging Biden to stop allowing people to come from China because of that white lung virus or whatever? White lung, I think they're calling it.
Oh, every month it's a new one. So
walking pneumonia that we covered last year
over there.
Yeah, maybe I've got walking pneumonia, so maybe I can't come in now. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see. Let's just ask the Biden administration about that. But hey, welcome into Redacted on this Monday. It's glad to be back with you guys. Hope you guys had a wonderful weekend. While you were enjoying your weekend, there seems to be another false flag moment ready to go. The United States, of course, has lots of warships in the Red Sea and, of course, in the Persian Gulf and in that area. They're just like begging to be hit and begging to be attacked right now. Are we about to see another false flag event that could get us into a war with Iran? That seems to be what's happening over the past 24 hours. We'll dive into that.
Plus cracks in the loyalty to Ukraine coming out of the West, the European Union, the U.S., and NATO all saying we're kind of at the home stretch here. We don't think that we're going to be continuing to support Ukraine. We're going to wind this down. We're going to watch how they're doing it. Plus, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has launched a lawsuit against Pfizer, and it's, as they say on Groundhog Day, it's a doozy. We're going to look at that because
I'm
finding it kind of fun.
Yeah. I'm glad Ken Paxton is back. I'm glad he's back in action.
Well, we're going to talk about what happened to Ken Paxton and how he is back. He is a dog with a bone now, so to speak.
Yeah.
We're also going to look at some climate truths and lies. We're going to play two truths and a lie when we look at the climate conference in Dubai. All of that and more as Redacted starts right now.
Everything's good here. Everything's good.
We're fine. We're fine. All right. Hey, welcome to Redacted. This is a show where we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores, such as lawsuits against Pfizer, truth about war, truth about false flags and war, all of that as we're going to cover today. These are the same things that we cover in the Redacted newsletter. I hope you're subscribed because we work on that every single day that this show comes out. It's Monday through Thursday. It comes out in the morning and then this show comes in the late afternoon. And so it is a compendium of all the things we talk about on this show. We've tried really hard to make sure we link you to all of the original sources so that you can read up on these things for yourself. and look at the data for yourself, and then come prepared to tell us how you think and what you feel about these stories. It is totally free. There is no upsell. There's nothing behind a paywall. There's never where we ask you to pay in order to access certain bits of data. Sometimes we link you to things that are behind paywalls, but that's not us. So again, the Redacted newsletter is at redacted.inc. You are watching the Redacted show. That also is free for you. So thank you so much for being a supporter of this show, and make sure that we can communicate that well, that way as well. So welcome to your Monday. A lot of stuff we're going to get to today. We're going to start by talking about this war in the Red Sea, false flags about that, and much, much more. I again warn you that Clayton's been suffering from some kind of cough respiratory issue. So we'll see how long he lasts. And are you okay?
Yeah, I'm just waiting when you're done.
I'm ready to hand it to
okay,
you.
Good.
And then
I just wanted to say hi to some folks in the chat. Thank you for that $100 super chat from SWF. Thank you for sent you something on X. I sent you something YouTube won't let me share here. Hmm. I will check that out. Thank you very, very much for that.
A lot of things fit that category.
Yeah. Mindhunter said, Clayton dropped Dubai just to impress you. No, I didn't do that to impress you, because I don't know why that would impress anybody. Being in and around people who are at COP28, not exactly impressive. In fact, terribly frightening and very bizarre. So I will bring that to you in just a moment. And Stephen Mack, thank you, says Redacted is serially the most based news outlet available. We try. We have no agenda here, just the truth. So we follow wherever.
I think they mean based in a bad way. Based is not a nice thing to say, right?
No, I think that's...
That's a very good thing to say. I regard that as a very high compliment. That's like the highest compliment you can give somebody.
Is that okay?
That's gamer terminology right there.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm not with it.
No. Well.
Okay.
Hang out with the chat room, and you'll see how base they are.
Thank you for the compliment. I didn't understand.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. Appreciate that. Greetings from Poland. Nice to see everyone, and welcome to all of you. Let us know where you're joining us from tonight. So thank you guys so much. All right, yeah, let's get to some of the big news. So get ready for a war with Iran. All right, get ready, because overnight, U.S. warship and other commercial ships, the U.K. ships, Japanese ships, and the United States were attacked with missiles by Iranian-affiliated ships in the Red Sea. So how do we know this? Well, because the Pentagon is telling us this. So we have to believe the Pentagon, right? And they always tell the truth. So when the Pentagon speaks, you should pay attention to that. They told the Associated Press, the Pentagon said Sunday, that a U.S. Navy destroyer and several commercial vessels came under attack in the Red Sea. So now just take a look at this map here. That's a very important shipping lane. Of course, one of the most important shipping lanes, one of the busiest shipping lanes in the world. Here's an idea. If you don't need to be there, why are you there? Sandwiched in between Djibouti, Ethiopia, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Sudan, Egypt, Israel, and Jordan. Why are you putting American lives at risk by showing up in the Red Sea? And then you wonder why, as we're in people's backyard, they don't like us. Get the hell out of there. The reason they don't like us is because we are there. You know, it's like hanging out in someone's backyard and taking a shit on a regular basis. Like, oh, there's that guy again. He's constantly in our backyard going and doing you know, his business. I'm sick of this guy constantly ruining our backyard. Get out of here. And you wonder why they're going to hit you? The Pentagon said this, and so it must be true. We are aware of reports regarding attacks on the USS Kearney and commercial vessels in the Red Sea, and provide information as soon as it becomes available, the Pentagon told the AP. Then last night, U.S. Central Command said the USS Kearney responded to attacks on three commercial vessels, the Unity Explorer, the Number 9, and the Sophie 2. CENTCOM said the Kearney shot down a total of three drones, including two that were headed in its direction. U.S. Central Command said the attacks were fully enabled by Iran, had targeted three commercial vessels connected to 14 countries with ballistic missiles or drones. So fully enabled, Iran fully enabled all of this. They're such enablers. So kind of reminds me of something. On August 4th, 1964, in the Gulf of Tonkin, something interesting happened. The USS Maddox was patrolling the waters in the Gulf of Tonkin when it suddenly came under heavy attack by the North Vietnamese torpedo boats. They were so fast moving, the captain even called in air support because they were appearing out of nowhere. They were coming from all sides. All sides. We need air support to bomb the waters in order to hit these fast-moving North Vietnamese boats. The U.S. press, of course, heard about the incident immediately without really checking at all because they just got it from the Pentagon. The U.S. press snapped right to attention and reported atrocities. America attacked. U.S. planes hit back. Three red PT boats attacked U.S. ship off North Vietnam. Oh my God, the United States was attacked? Just like at Pearl Harbor, we were attacked again? Unbelievable. So, and Congress fell in line and authorized an attack on North Vietnam then, of course, in response. They called it the fight if we must resolution. The fight if we must resolution. Oh, I guess, you know, we're sort of, I guess we have to do this.
I don't like that at all, but it is clever PR.
I guess we have to do it. I guess we have to fight, don't we? So, yeah, how can
we
not?
We had, I like that it, it doesn't cover why we were there. That's not important. It's like, fight if we must.
Yeah, don't ask that question.
Oh, I hate being dragged into someone else's neighborhood and then have to fight them.
Right. I'm in the Red Sea. Why are you in the Red Sea?
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Don't ask those questions. You commie for asking those questions. How could we not respond to this tyranny? Patrolling right off their coasts and being attacked, attacking U.S. warships. Those commie bastards. We have to attack them. It's the right thing to do. Remember, at the time, the captain of the ship called in air support. Well, it turned out a few of those pilots later admitted that there were no targets. They were told to drop their bombs basically on empty ocean. Nothing. Phantoms. Why? Well, we now know why, of course. In the early 2000s, the truth finally came out after a lot of first-person acknowledgement about what was going on there. We finally got the documents from the NSA, the National Security Agency. Of course, this is the same government organization that Edward Snowden exposed years later, showing they were spying on Americans, of course. The NSA documents showed there was no attack, and the teletype messages and the conversations and the internal documents and the orders given by the captain, all of it, revealed it was a false flag to rally support to enter Vietnam. That's exactly what happened. So, and I have to admit, I do find it a little heartening this morning, actually, because, I mean, you guys are an amazing audience. You understand this. In fact, before I even started doing this story, so many of you already in the chat, as I started this story, said Gulf of Tonkin. Like, before I even got to this part of what I was going to talk about. So you're already thinking that, which is great. So I have to admit, I was pretty heartened this morning to notice that I went on Google Trends to see how many people were searching for Gulf of Tonkin this morning. Look at this. Over the past 24 hours, Americans jumped all over Google to learn about the lies that were used to drive us into Vietnam. They're like, this sounds very familiar. This sounds very familiar to what's happening. And even on Twitter, look at this, on X, trending in the United States, Gulf of Tonkin. Trending, because people aren't falling for this shit anymore.
Well, I was just talking about this on a live stream the other day. It's like, once you see a false flag and all the information and propaganda around it, it makes it so much easier to see it when it happens again. And then it's like, the more people that learn that, the more people that start to question it. But it's just funny how, like, once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah. And there's a long line of it, which we'll get to in a second. So this is like, can you guys come up with a new idea? I mean, they try different variations of it. And they plant seeds of truth, right, to kind of throw us off the scent of it. But at the heart of it, this is how they continue to keep us in these forever wars.
But this is something that I have to fight against when what David says, like, you almost assume everything that they say is lies. And so you're like, oh, okay, that's probably a lie. But as a journalist, we have to not just assume that everything is true or a lie. That throws me off, where I'm like, okay, here's a story. Let me give that the benefit of the doubt. And then I'm usually screaming by the end of the
right.
day
when I when you dive into
the lie until they prove it. You know what I mean? Like, because they don't ever prove anything. So it's like, if it's like, fool me once, shame on you or me or whatever. Or, you know,
yes,
you
know, but I don't want us to get the you know, reputation of just all in conspiracy. And so we're looking for those angles all the time. We have to try to take everything neutrally and then dig for ourselves. And it's really tough.
It's very difficult because when the first piece of news that comes out is already coming from an intelligence news agency, like the Associated Press was the first to report this, they are an arm of the U.S. intelligence apparatus, right? It's like basically the CIA put out a news release. That's what the Associated Press is. The New York Times, Washington Post, et cetera. They are extensions of the U.S. intelligence state. So when that's the first piece that you get, you're like, okay, well, is there a kernel of truth here? Then now we've got to start peeling this onion back to find out the real truth. And it makes it, you know, makes it incredibly difficult, of course, because they are fully funded and independent journalists are not, and they're few and far between. Go ahead, Philip.
Well, it's the boy that cried wolf scenario. Like if the U.S. government, like the Pentagon, want us to believe them, they've got to stop getting caught lying so damn often.
Yeah.
It's like the fact that they're caught lying as much as they are, like, of course they don't have any credibility. Like, why would anybody believe them?
Right.
You know, establish a different base of you know, judgment here. Like, let us believe you. But how can we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because their track record is so... And they try something big, you know, they pull a 9/11 or something. Americans are waking up that their government is foisting this lie on them. Now, side note here, one of the pilots on that day was told to come help. The guy that, one of the names of these pilots is James Stockdale. This is a guy on your screen. I became fascinated with Stockdale a number of years ago. You guys may remember, of course. Does his face ring a bell for any of you? I remember, this is really when I became fascinated with U.S. history and at a much younger age, but Ross Perot, of course, chose him as his vice presidential candidate back in the day. He then became Vice Admiral Stockdale, but at the time he was just a pilot in Vietnam. He led the attack that day in the air on the USS Ticonderoga. So when they called in air support, there was your guy, Stockdale. And he came to protect the desperate USS Maddox, was under attack by the North Vietnamese. All these torpedo boats were attacking the USS Maddox. So he took to the air with some other pilots, and he had just learned that it had taken over 20 torpedo attacks, the USS Maddox did, and they were in desperate need of help. So he bravely took to the air. For more than 90 minutes, he later recounted how he made parallel runs to the ship, back and forth, at low altitude, below 2,000 feet. Looking for the enemy vessels, he reported later, quote, "I had the best seat in the house to watch that event, and our destroyers were just shooting at phantom targets. There were no PT boats there. There was nothing there but black water and American firepower." His other pilots in that same squadron also reported the exact same thing. Phantom targets, no PT boats, nothing. No North Vietnamese were there. And he noticed right away, by the way, that when he flew over the USS Maddox, it was in perfect condition. Pretty remarkable for a ship that barely survived torpedo attacks. It was under heavy bombardment by over 20 torpedo attacks. So in other words, the North Vietnamese didn't attack the USS Maddox. It was totally fabricated. Question, does the American government then lie to you on a regular basis in order to drag us into wars? If you're still on the fence about it, let me refresh your memory with just a shortened list that I put together.
I want to give you a joke. There is a frog's behind water tight. That seems like where you're going with that, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, exactly. So here, let me give you the shortened list to see if I can help you here. So let me jog your memory. Spanish-American War, the fake attack on the USS Maine, Pearl Harbor in World War II, got us into World War II, Vietnam, Gulf of Tonkin, which we just recounted here, babies and incubators, Gulf War, with an actress who stood up in front of Congress and cried. Weapons of mass destruction, second Gulf War. Assad gasses his own people, U.S. attacks Syria. Those are just a few. You feel free to add any more to the list here. Remember, it took the false flag of Gulf of Tonkin to get Congress to give Lyndon Johnson power to attack. We never declared war on Vietnam. Congress gave him the power to escalate the war. It's exactly what the Gulf of Tonkin resolution was. Now the neocons don't even wait for false flags anymore. Senators weeks ago passed a bill giving Biden war powers to attack Iran. Here's warmonger Lindsey Graham.
We'll introduce a resolution in the United States Senate to allow military action by the United States in conjunction with Israel to knock Iran out of the oil business. Iran, if you escalate this war, we're coming for you.
Are you effectively poised to declare war on Iran? That's very strong language.
I am poised to use military force to destroy the source of funding for Hamas and Hezbollah.
Okay.
Everyone in our chat saying, yeah, 9-11, 9-11, 9-11. The USS Cole, thank you. Yes, exactly. U.S.-Mexican War.
Lusitana.
Yeah, Yugoslavia. Serbia. I didn't forget Serbia. Right. Exactly. So early this morning, U.S. Central Command released this statement on the attacks in the Red Sea. These attacks represent a direct threat to international commerce and maritime security. They have jeopardized the lives of international crews representing multiple countries around the world. We also have every reason to believe that these attacks, while launched by the Houthi rebels in Yemen, are fully enabled by Iran. The United States will consider all appropriate responses in full coordination with its international allies and partners. So, what are they going to do? Because
you want a war in the Red Sea?
The Houthis can literally attack oil rigs in Saudi Arabian oil rigs and wipe out enormous amounts of European oil and natural gas if they want to. And there's nothing they could do to stop them. So if that's really what they're going to do, they're playing with fire. So you'll see some sort of a response. I've seen some speculate, military experts saying the U.S. and Israel will launch some bombs into some empty hillsides in Yemen and say they struck back and they won't hit anything. But if they really wanted to hit actual Houthi targets, they are in for a world of hurt. Mm. They unleash that because they will fire back and destroy a massive amount of infrastructure, and we will be in fully engaged if that's what they want. So we'll see exactly what the U.S. and Israeli response. If they really want to be pulled into this, expect some sort of a big retaliation towards Iran over the next 24, 48 hours. Or more of these attacks will continue until it just builds up to a boiling point. So we'll keep our eye on these false flags.
Do you mean attacks or attacks?
Yeah, attacks or attacks.
Okay.
Let us know in the chat what you guys think is going on here. But this is, by the way, I mean, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin came out and made a surprising statement yesterday, excuse me, where he basically said, we're calling on Israel, you got to stop the civilian deaths. Mm-hmm. Or you're making a strategic blunder, a strategic mistake, meaning for every civilian you kill, you're creating basically five more Hamas. You're yes. going to create an anger and resentment that will last. It'll be a defeat for Israel. And Senator Lindsey Graham came out just a few minutes later and said, he's naive and I've lost all faith in Lloyd Austin and he's a failure and, you know, I he's not credible at all anymore. So we'll see what happens here. Excuse me. Who's going to win this little battle? Neocons or Lloyd Austin? Is Lloyd Austin about to be canned because of making those statements? And is the neocons, right. are they going to win? It's going to be interesting to see what happens there. Go ahead, Philip.
Yeah, like when Lindsey Graham is saying that, you know, is insulting you, you're really down there.
Right.
Yeah. Lindsey Graham, he reminds me of like a high schooler who felt really good making some points in debate club and then just keeps going because it feels good
with
the
same three points
to feed his ego. He's like, you could tell he really was empowered by making that threat to Iran as if Iran was actually listening to Meet the Press.
Yeah.
He was like, Iran, if you try this, like, oh, that felt so good.
I mean, he goes wherever the wind blows him.
Yeah.
Literally.
Right. All right. Well, let me tell you what the wind's going to blow us on Redacted as Clayton recovers from that. We're going to talk about Ukraine and some of the allowance is drying up from Ukraine and we're seeing many Western powers now sort of feeling fatigued, telling the world that we're out of money and steam for this. So what will happen? We're going to break down the lies around that. We're also going to look at the Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, what he has done to sue Pfizer. He's going to try to pierce the corporate armor by proving fraud. There's a lot there. Now, of course, this is an opening salvo. When you make a claim in a lawsuit, you claim the sun and the moon and the stars. And what will stick there? There's a lot there. There's a lot of there. So we're going to take a look at that as well. I brought my PDFs. It's one of those segments where Natalie's brought some PDFs of litigation. You do want to see it, though, especially if you lived through the pandemic, which I'm assuming you did. If you didn't, you're one. You don't understand this. We're going to do that. We're also going to talk about some of the climate truths and lies that are coming out of the UN COP28 conference in Dubai. It's it's, you know, a lot of grandstanding and I was saying pandering and grandstanding at the same time. So that's a new word. Grandstanding. What is it you'd like me to read?
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Clayton's pointing at things with a mouse. So I'm just trying to see if that's... So anyway, we're going to get to all of that and more. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Moomoo.
Yes, we do. There's a new savings account that Moomoo has just rolled out with a 5.1% interest rate. That's right. So, you know, instead of like a 0.01% cash account that you could get with your normal savings account, go over to our friends at Moomoo, redacted.inc/Moomoo. And right now, not only will you open your normal trading account and get 15 free stocks plus one extra SoFi stock right now, just for opening your account and making your initial deposits, but they're giving you now a 5.1 cash sweep account. And that means that all the money that's just sort of sitting there in cash, like a normal savings account, still earns 5% interest rate every day while you're deciding if you want to invest some. So I just sold off some stocks that I had for a while, and they're sitting in cash right now in my account. The reason it's sitting in cash, because I haven't reinvested it yet. So while it's sitting there, why not having it earning interest? And this is an amazing way to do that. So I just moved some more money over to Moomoo, because I'm like, that's a way. I'm not going to have it sit in a 0% interest rate account. It now can actually make some money. So they just rolled this out, and this is really fantastic. And that means you don't need to manual exchange anything. You don't have to swap anything around. While you're sitting there waiting to invest in something, maybe in a few months, or you want to wait and invest in some different commodities and oil and gas or gold or whatever it is, you can wait and you can make money in your cash sweep account right now. So head on over to redacted.inc/Moomoo, get 16 free stocks when you sign up and make your initial deposits. And then when your cash is just sitting there, it can earn 5.1% annualized return in that account. Fantastic. This beats your small local bank that has just been gobbled up by the big boys anyway. And they're all going out of business anyway. So this is the reason why to move your money into a smarter, safer account right now with $1 million in FDIC insurance protection for your funds. That beats the $250,000 that local banks have. So $1 million in insurance for your money, meaning your money is safe with no risks, up to $1 million. There, redacted.inc/Moomoo. There you go. All right.
Is there something that...
No, I was just, I was just talking to some people in the chat. And I wanted to people are saying, was I pouring a whiskey? No, it's just water.
Oh.
It's just some seltzer water.
Okay.
And yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that,
Clayton.
Well, the West is ready to cut off Ukraine from its bomb allowance. Can you believe this? After almost 2 years of funding a war and allowing so many Ukrainians to die for a war that's based on a lie, now the West may be actually willing to close the wallet and admit defeat. Now, there's a laundry list of indications about this today and over the weekend from the United States, the European Union, and NATO. So first, the biggest one. Here we have headlines now reporting that the White House has warned that the U.S. will run out of funds for Ukraine by the end of the year. This is shocking admission that the United States doesn't have it to give, but continues to grandstand about it. This came from a letter published by the White House budget director, Shalanda Young. Here is what her letter says. She says, "I want to be clear, without congressional action, by the end of the year, we will run out of resources to procure more weapons and equipment for Ukraine and to provide equipment from U.S. military stocks. There is no magical pot of funding available to meet this moment. We are out of money and nearly out of time." But she still goes on to ask for more money, even though, look at this here, she's saying there's no magical pot. It's not there. It's bled from a stone, but we want it. So here she goes on to say that we need Congress to do something about it, make that magical pot. In other words, there's no magical pot, she says, but get the money.
You know what I love, too, about this White House statement is that it has at the top a Christmas ornament. Like, it's like basically saying, here at the White House, we're celebrating Christmas and it's warm and nice and cozy. And, we're sending money to Israel and around the rest of the world. But for you guys over in Ukraine that are out in the snow right now, and we've killed over 500,000 of your people. Christmas is not coming to Ukraine.
Right. Well, they're asking. So here's what she says, that she must stress that helping Ukraine defend itself and secure as a, its future as a sovereign, democratic, independent, and prosperous nation advances our national security interests. Now, I could poke a million holes in that sentence alone. First of all, Ukraine is not sovereign, nor independent, nor democratic. They do what we tell them to do, and the rest of the Western countries, such as the EU and NATO countries. They are absolutely not democratic. They can't even vote out Zelensky if they wanted to, even though elections were supposed to have be happening now. So that in and of itself is a lie. I couldn't leave that alone, but let's go back to her statement. She's saying that if we help, it prevents larger conflict in the region that could involve NATO and put U.S. forces in harm's way and deter future aggression, making us all safer. As President Biden has said, when dictators do not pay a price for their aggression, they will cause more chaos and death and destruction. So basically, Putin's a dictator and he needs a spanking so that he remembers what it feels like and he won't do it again. They just keep going, she says, even though Russia has said that they have no plan to take over any other region other than the Donbas area that voted to join Russia and asked to become a part of Russia. Okay, still lies. So, it's in Congress's hands. She says, we're out of money to support Ukraine in this fight. This isn't a next year problem.
Something's not adding up here, though.
Okay.
Because on the same day that this statement comes out, the White House admits through the Pentagon that they are now going to ramp up military artillery and weapons productions by four times. Four times.
Yes.
And in fact, someone in our chat just said that in Scranton, Pennsylvania, the 155-millimeter artillery shell factory is now running at full production, Philly Vortex says. So it's up and running fully, and we're going to be pumping out four times the amount of artillery and weapons. We don't have anything for them, though. Something's fishy.
Okay. I mean, I'm not, this is what Al Gore has called fuzzy math, because right. I'm not in the coffers here. I mean, I know what a $1 trillion deficit looks like. I know that the United States doesn't have it. I don't know what she means when she talks about there's no magical pot of money, because we use a lot of magical money.
Right.
So before we go on, though, I think it's important to look at the fault lines in funding for Ukraine, but let's remind ourselves of the map once again. So this was the map on June 1st, 2023, when the counteroffensive began. This is the map just today that I screenshot from RIA sources, which seem to match up with most Western sources as well. I want to remind you what you're looking at. The red areas there are areas that asked Russia to come in and defend them from an impending attack that Zelensky ordered on Crimea and other areas in the Donbas in 2022. Recall that those are areas that Ukraine has been spending $1 million per day since 2014 to attack civilian infrastructure, and those people have been begging Russia to please annex them the same way they did Crimea, which is the little island at the bottom. Russia did so, came in 2022, offered them the option to vote to become a part of Russia in September 2022, and they voted overwhelmingly to join Russia because they were tired of being a victim of genocide by Ukraine. Now, if we could just leave that map up a little bit longer, because the counteroffensive has taken back no land at all. Those are people now who want to be Russia. Why are people dying? Because Ukraine continues to send untrained soldiers up against that line to take it back so that they can continue to terrorize those people and reclaim that land as part of Ukraine. So that is specifically what the United States is asking them to do and supporting them to do. Now, given that the U.S. has funneled billions into this effort and Ukraine has lost between 70 and 200,000. I've seen upwards of 300,000 in this effort. Why then do we want to send more money to get more people killed in order to take back land that doesn't want to be Ukraine? That's a pertinent question. Now, that's the question that the EU is debating, too. Take a look at this headline. Next week, EU leaders will have a summit in Brussels, and they simply cannot agree to an aid package for Ukraine. You notice who they're putting here front and center as like the fly in the ointment.
Oh yeah, of course.
Viktor Orban.
He's like, I can't shake your hand.
Cannot do it.
Like, what's that on your hand?
Right. This is what they're implying, is that it's really just this guy who is, but everyone else would, right? Now, this happened a few months ago. The EU wanted to offer money to Ukraine, but member states just wouldn't vote for it. So instead, it was kind of, they said, oh, okay, we can't give you money. We will shoot ourselves in the foot in loyalty. That's what they did, because they launched another round of sanctions on Russia. So they hurt themselves and the European economy that continues to suffer. So they sure showed them. And finally, NATO head Jens Stoltenberg said that they should be prepared for bad news over the weekend about the war in Ukraine. This is an interview that was done in English, but a German news program conducted it, so they dubbed it in German. So I'm choosing not to show you the audio, but here is the video of it, and I will tell you what he says. What he said was, war develops in phases, and we have to support Ukraine in both good and bad times. We should also be prepared for bad news. So is that a harbinger of what's to come? Meaning we do not expect Ukraine to ever... that we do not expect Ukraine to ever actually take that territory back. The bad news is here.
Yeah, what bad news is like, he talking about?
In my opinion, if you were to ask, what's the worst case scenario for Ukraine? We're here. This is it.
The worst case scenario was when you didn't adhere to the Minsk Accords and you decided to jettison the Minsk Accords. That's the worst case scenario. That was the destructive moment of your choosing.
Yeah.
When you admitted, well, as Zelensky admitted, they never intended to go forward with the Minsk Accords and that it was a joke. And of course, Angela Merkel admitted it was only meant to buy Ukraine time to become stronger.
Right.
But worst case scenario, yeah, 500,000 people dead, an entire generation wiped away.
No, I think what you just answered is, what's the pivot point that would lead to the worst case scenario? But the worst case scenario is right now. Every day it gets worse, but this is the worst it could have been. This is reality. We have created the worst. I cannot imagine that it gets worse. It does every day. Here's what, again, NATO head Jens Stoltenberg said. He acknowledged Ukraine has been unable to move the front line, but claimed, let's look at the map again, the front line, right, did not move between June and December. But he says that Ukraine forces were still achieving big victories. What big victories is he talking about, I wonder? Maybe for Zelensky, personal big victories?
Maybe they just mean financial. Yeah, financial victories.
Okay, because, you know, your average age of a soldier being 43, because most young men have died inside Ukraine defending an area so that they could take it back and torture civilians, I don't find that to be a very interesting victory.
Maybe we don't see it on the map, but maybe there's some of those places in there where, like, they made it from one side of the street to the other, and okay, so it doesn't look like much, but that right. was a pretty big victory that they're now on the north and the south side of that one street. I don't know.
They crossed the road.
Like, much has changed there.
They crossed the road and they managed to take cover in an old barn that's now been destroyed, and they now have claimed that territory back again.
Okay.
In fact, it can get a lot worse. It could get a lot worse for Ukraine, because if you keep that map up again, imagine that that's all Russia has right now. The ethnic area, the ethnic Russian territory that's been bombed since 2014. Imagine if they don't unconditionally surrender, how much further Russia will push and how much more land Russia will take. And pretty soon, this country is going to fully collapse, have no water route at all, have no access to ocean waters. And what happens on the western side when Poland decides to take what they want? Ukraine will cease to exist as a country. So the longer this goes on, the worse it gets.
Okay, but let's keep the map up as we talk about this, because the dark gray area between the like eggshell color that is currently Ukraine and the red, which is annexed Russia, the dark gray shading in between there is still part of Donbas region that wants to join Russia, but Russia has not been able to actually take control over. So those places are still controlled by Ukraine and are still getting terrorized. by much of the SBU army. So that is still up for grabs. So Russia still intends to move west to that line. Now, what the West tells us is that Russia wants to go all the way to the Atlantic across Europe.
There's
no evidence of that. Putin did not want to do that. It was it was his parliament that voted to even launch the special forces operation. So, but again, that's what Russia has said is the goal, is just to take back or to take that dark gray shaded contested area. But the red area will never fall back into Western hands again. What happens to the eggshell color we're talking about, or egg crew or whatever, the lighter cream there is now what is up for grabs. Now, we've seen former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton saying, well, we'd like to place American oligarchs in there, right? She didn't call them oligarchs, but that's what they are, saying, well, America's willing to go in and rebuild that because it was Russian oligarchs before. So America's private interest is very willing to take over what implodes inside of Ukraine. But in terms of worst case scenarios, I can't imagine for today it could get any worse. Let's look at what Zelensky said on his public relations tour that he's on. He spoke to the Associated Press.
Sorry. Anytime we play Associated Press, they take our show down. So
okay.
Can we not do
that? You were
that?
On camera for that. Telling me what to do.
No, because I see it over here in the preview. I'm okay. Like, no.
Most of the time, Clayton does that off camera, and I'm so glad he's been busted.
No, I'm fine to do it. No.
Okay.
Well, I can't
we're
talk.
We're not going to show you this.
Lozenge in my mouth.
Maybe, Philip, can you just put it on the screen paused so you can see Zelensky, and I will tell you what he says?
Yeah, give me a second. Okay. Let me try that. So go.
Okay, yep. If we put it up and okay. Well, so anyway, I will tell you what he says here. He says, winter as a whole is a new phase of war. I'd say that a winter war takes place not only on the front lines, but inside cities too. He says, we wanted faster results from the counteroffensive. And from that perspective, unfortunately, we did not achieve the desired results. And that is a fact. Now, I'm very worried about this idea that winter means that you need to bring war into cities. He says that winter takes war not on the front lines, but inside cities too. Why then, why does cold weather mean you have to fight inside of cities? Anyone who has military experience want to ring in on that? Could that be my worry?
Wait, what was the question?
Okay, here's the quote. I'd say that a winter war takes place not only on the front lines, but inside cities too. Now, given that Ukraine, for anyone who is watching the truth, has a reputation for attacking civilian infrastructures, are they warning us that they're going to do that more now that winter's here? For whatever reason, cold weather means we need to attack inside cities and we can't attack. Now, I get the idea that, you know, frozen ground and muddy ground and you can't move your equipment around, right? That's true during war. But why then are we going to go and fight our wars inside of cities? Is this an admission that Ukraine has already been attacking civilian infrastructures? So maybe we want to get clear on that before we go broke helping this non-democratic nation. Let us know what you think in the chat below.
All right.
Do you have any
why
winter would mean you need to fight inside of cities?
I mean, there's no electricity anyway, so it's not like you, and there's no heating, so you're not really, unless you just have some protection of the empty walls that you're, to set up camp. And obviously also, if you learn from the Battle of the Bulge, you can't light fires. The moment you light a fire and you see smoke in the winter, boom, like you're done. You can't light a fire. You can't do anything like that. So the Allies learned that. You absolutely, talk about trench foot and horrible situation in the Battle of the Bulge. That's a perfect example of that.
Yeah. What were you going to say, David?
The buildings block the wind. That's what I was going to say. It keeps the, keeps them warmer.
Okay.
Obviously.
Right. Yeah.
But, who knows what their intentions are with taking over civilian infrastructure. Who knows? Good luck. I mean, I don't know what they've got left at this point. What kind of weapons are being sent there? We don't know. But we do know from the IDF today, former Israeli Defense Forces Major General came out and admitted every bullet we fire, every weapon we have, everything we have in Israel all comes from the United States. Every bomb we drop, everything. And we learned that any of the stockpiles that were being held back for us, as former UN weapons inspector Scott Ritter just admitted, a lot of that, what was supposed to be going to Ukraine, was not sent there. And we told them we didn't have anything else. And then suddenly we sent a huge tranche of weapons to Israel. And, oh, but you thought you told us that you didn't have any anymore. So I guess they're gone now. But no, they're all sent to Israel. So that's what happened.
Okay. All right. Well, we have more news to get to. Thank you for your comments in the chat and your informed comments as well. We're going to talk about, what are we going to talk about? Oh, the new attorney general suit from Texas over Pfizer. Are they able to pierce the corporate armor and prove that Pfizer committed fraud in what it told the public about the COVID vaccine? I find this especially interesting because it would seem from this lawsuit that the FDA was actually not very happy with Pfizer, and Pfizer kept doing things that the FDA asked them not to do. This is news to me that actually the FDA might have been watching. So we're going to look at that. We're also going to look at some of the climate truths and lies coming out of the COP28 United Nations conference in Dubai. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Private Internet Access, because if you think you have a private life online, you don't. I'm sorry to tell you. Your internet provider and many other who are looky-loos know a lot about you. You know this. You can conduct an experiment by just saying around your phone that you like something, and then an ad for it pops right up. That happens all the time. Did you know that your internet service provider also knows literally everything you do online? That's why over 30 million people have signed up for our next sponsor. You've got to check out Private Internet Access. Would you ever hand over your laptop or a phone to a stranger and ask them to take a look at your browsing history? Probably not. That's an invasion. And yet someone out there knows exactly what you do online, whether you like it or not. So it's a great idea to use a VPN. That's what Private Internet Access is. It basically sets up a higher great wall around what you are up to, so you choose who gets to look at what you're up to and who doesn't. A VPN is an app that hides your IP address and safeguards your internet connection through an encrypted tunnel. That way it shields your digital life from the prying eyes of those who like to exploit your private information. So a VPN is very easy to learn to use. It is worth learning what it is and how it can protect you. So if you want all the benefits of Private Internet Access now, then please do. Now is the time to subscribe. Go to piavpn.com/redacted and you'll get an 83% discount. Seriously, 83%. That's $2.03 a month, and you get an extra 4 months completely free. But you must go right now to our URL. It's piavpn.com/redacted for a truly private digital life. One more time, that's piavpn.com/redacted. We thank them so much for their support of Redacted.
Let's see. James Hatfield here in our chat brings up a good point. It says winter kits issued to units include smokeless gas stoves, Clayton. It's not the 1940s anymore.
Oh.
I understand that, James. But my point is that any sort of... I want to investigate this more to find out, because from what I understand, the last reporting I saw on what UK has sent them, upwards of like 10,000 just sleeping bags, warm clothes, no mention at all of smokeless gas, things to heat food or anything like that. And the last we saw, their emergency kits that they had didn't include any gas stoves. So maybe you know something. I'd love to know what winter kits they have specifically, and if they're using them and how they're using them specifically. Also that includes smoking cigarettes, which many of them do. No smoking. I mean, you can see that clearly. So there's a lot of things that you can't do in that situation. But anyway, it'd be interesting to know exactly why they would want to seek out these buildings in those situations.
All right. Well, Pfizer engaged in false, deceptive, and misleading acts and practices by making unsupported claims regarding the COVID-19 vaccine in violation of the Texas Deceptive Trade Practices Act. This is what Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is claiming in his lawsuit against Pfizer that was launched at the end of November. Now, this is really interesting, and I think that it's Paxton swinging for the fences here in this lawsuit so that Pfizer is forced to show its hand and forced to show us what they knew and what they absolutely did not know. This is based on 6 months of investigation from the Attorney General's office. Now, it's interesting because he was kicked out of that office for a long time. We're going to talk about this because we didn't really talk much about the impeachment trial of Ken Paxton on this show, but it was really interesting, and I think we need to know who it is that's leading this charge against Pfizer. In an interview with Tucker Carlson recently after his acquittal, he talked about what he had been through, how he had been attacked, why he thinks it was because he has been so aggressive against the Biden administration policies. It really has taken a man with a mission and turned him into a man with a mission, if you know what I mean. He was called the most aggressive legal opponent of the Biden administration in the United States. In fact, here's CNN admitting that Texas is the place where Biden laws go to die because Ken Paxton is so litigious against Biden laws. In fact, he sued the administration over the border, over healthcare, over the environment, specifically around the Keystone Pipeline. He says that is most likely why he faced this impeachment watch.
Had filed 48 suits against the Biden administration.
Yes, and I think that was the motivation. We were causing a lot of trouble for the Biden administration. Even if we didn't win, we slowed them down, and we were winning, I think our number is 77% of our cases. So we are a huge problem for the Biden administration, and that was the way to get me out of the way. And obviously that had an impact on the lawsuits being filed by Texas and other states.
So you think that that the effort to remove you from office really came from the Biden administration?
I really do. I think that's where it was instigated, and then there were other groups in Texas that we can talk about that I think were largely participating.
All right. Well, when he faced impeachment, he was not allowed to even go into his office. He was not allowed to further his litigation or any of his work that he had been elected to do. Watch.
So what happens once it was announced you're being impeached? What happens to you?
It was horrible. I was immediately suspended. So I lost my office. I couldn't do any more lawsuits against Biden.
What do you mean you were suspended?
Suspended means I can't be in the office anymore. I can't direct what's going on in the office, even though I'm elected, even though they proved nothing, even though they had no testimony, no
evidence. You hadn't been convicted.
Hadn't been convicted. They had presented no evidence. They had presented no witnesses, and I'm out.
Okay. That's a very weird process. So you don't even know you're being investigated. The moment you find out you're being investigated and impeached, you're suspended from your job?
Yes. I think it's constitutional. And I think it needs to be changed because they should have to prove something before the will of the voters is overridden. And that's what happened. The will of the voters. I was in 4.5 months. Now I've been out of office, suspended for almost 4 months. So half my time of my term now, I've spent not being able to do what the people of Texas elected me to do.
Okay. Now, I do want to recommend that you watch this interview because he speaks about how attorney generals can no longer litigate election fraud. That's interesting, right? It's terrifying, but that's not what we're going to look at here, so I don't want to get off base. Let's look at Pfizer. We came here to look at this litigation. Let's do it. Here is his lawsuit. Here is his main claim that, in a nutshell, Pfizer deceived the public. First, by misrepresenting the efficacy of the Pfizer vaccine, and he's going to point out that they knew that 95% was a BS number. And then they continued to mislead the public even after they had their feet held to the fire. And then he says that not only that, it literally didn't work, and people who received this vaccine were more likely to have negative outcomes of COVID. This is true. The problem that I have with this, and we're going to talk about how Ken Paxton overcomes this, is that yes, Pfizer did give this BS research methodology to the FDA, but the FDA allowed it, and the FDA regularly allows this with clinical trials of medicines and vaccines. This is a problem that they're going to have to overcome because of this research. Now, I can give you many vaccines and medicines that have been manipulated in their clinical trials. And I have done that here on this show, but here's one that I think is just worth looking at. Recall this from the book Dope Sick, that FDA regulators and big pharma executives in 2002 were quietly holding private meetings at expensive hotels. This was found out by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. The meetings led to the development of what they called enriched enrollment, an aptly named practice that allowed drug companies to weed out people from their studies who didn't respond well to the drugs, therefore tipping the balance towards FDA approval of new drugs and away from science. So this is one of many examples where the FDA knows that the books are being cooked on these vaccine trials and allows it. So yes, Pfizer used what Al Gore would call fuzzy math to do this, but the FDA still gave them emergency use authorization. Now, Texas is claiming that they gamed the FDA, but the FDA is not a party to this litigation. It kind of makes you wonder why, right? If the FDA was pushing Pfizer for better numbers and Pfizer was sort of hoodwinking them and then going around them and going to the press and saying totally bogus things, you would think maybe the FDA would want in on this litigation. I do think they would be forced to testify if this case goes forward. And so that's an interesting thing to look at. But they say then that they took this data and lied to the public, even so. Now, the AG claims that the FDA was warning Pfizer how they wanted better data and that they weren't all that happy and they wanted to be followed up with. This is news to me because the FDA never informed the... Go ahead, David. Yeah.
I was saying, can I ask, is that why the FDA worked with them to try to hide this data for 75 years? Because that was both of them doing that together.
Right. When FOIA requests were put out towards the FDA was protecting Pfizer. That's an excellent point. You know, what Ken Paxton says is that the FDA was pushing them, but they didn't tell us that. So that's interesting, right? Because we are owed informed consent. We are supposed to give informed consent. That means we must be informed. So if the FDA wasn't all that happy with the numbers it was getting from Pfizer, shouldn't they have told us rather than continuing to issue these authorizations for the COVID vaccine? Here's what he says about that. He says the FDA had warned Pfizer that it needed additional information to determine whether the vaccine protected against transmission of COVID. But instead, Pfizer engaged in a fear-mongering campaign. And then look at the second one, the third point here. It says Pfizer knowingly made false and unsupported claims about vaccine performance against variants, specifically about Delta, because they didn't know anything about Delta. They just went out there and said, oh, yeah, it's probably good against Delta, too. Now, he says that Pfizer tried to censor the former head of the FDA for pointing out that the vaccine was not effective against the Delta virus and went so far as to call people who were critical of the vaccine as criminals. We've seen that from Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer. Here's where he sort of lets the FDA off the hook, though. This is Ken Paxton. I'm pretending he wrote this personally, but this is where the state of Texas says that Pfizer can't attempt to hide behind the FDA to shield its deception from scrutiny, especially where, as here, the FDA explicitly cautioned the company that it did not have adequate data to support various claims. Well, again, that's so interesting, right? Because the FDA appears to be holding Pfizer's feet to the fire, but they never told us, right? Anyone? Yeah, that's weird. Okay. In
that
short,
that would have caused vaccine hesitancy.
Right.
But doing that.
If the FDA had any kind of butterflies in its stomach, it owed us an explanation about
it. Right, because these people were on television and they were in front of Congress on a regular basis, testifying before Congress. And they were telling us and encouraging us to go out and get double boosted.
Who's these people you're talking about?
FDA, head of the FDA, and representatives from the FDA on television showing up on Bloomberg and on CNBC and others.
Right.
Who were telling us that everything's safe. Don't worry about anything. Right. Go out and get boosted. Go out and get triple boosted.
Yeah.
Go out and get quadruple boosted.
Right. So I do wonder why the FDA is painted here as like, well, they tried and Pfizer was hoodwinking them and telling us something else. Because, again, the FDA should either the FDA has to decide what side of the table they want to be in. Are they going to be with Pfizer or are they going to come around to the table with Ken Paxton in the state of Texas? You know,
what do you think? Where do they get their money? Who's, you know. Again, if they cared, they would have been out on television telling us what they knew privately.
Right.
What they were saying behind closed doors to Pfizer executives.
Yeah.
Warning them and telling them, here's what we're seeing. You, what's going on here? And instead, they put out this, you know, they put out smoke, basically.
And a lot
With their track records, with the pharmaceutical industry's track record, you would think the FDA, they're the ones that are supposed to scrutinize the information they give them. So it's like, when they did the trials and everything, that you could only select a certain amount of things from the app And if you didn't go by one of those, you were removed from the study. That's something the FDA would see. They would see the data that they're getting. So they're supposed to be on the pharmaceutical industry, keeping their feet up to the fire on this information. But obviously they don't.
Right. The research methods are very suspect. For instance, they only counted if certain people who had taken the COVID vaccine got COVID within a 2-week period after the second vaccine, whereas a lot of them got COVID in between the first and second vaccine, and they didn't count that. They counted those as success rates because those people didn't get COVID in the windows they were looking at. Again, they only were looking for whether or not those people got COVID, not symptomatic COVID, not severe COVID. Furthermore, a large number, something like 7,000 of the placebo group went ahead and got vaccinated. So it wasn't a true placebo group. Why did they allow that, right? That's kind of weird. All kinds of strange things. Now, a large part of this hinges on what Pfizer did when it became clear that their vaccine was not performing well and people were still getting COVID. What did they do? They doubled down. They continued to use their exceedingly flawed data from their very small and problematic studies. Here is a summary that's, you know, worth reading. They also accuse Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla of starting this misinformation campaign in the summer of 2020, even before there was a COVID vaccine. Here's what he said. He talked about how the vaccine works in humans, said that it creates immune responses that are able to kill the virus, and that the vaccine can neutralize the virus. But as the emergency use authorization data later showed, Pfizer measured efficacy only against symptomatic COVID, not whether the vaccine was neutralized or killing a virus. So he was saying things that they simply had not studied or did not know. And so we can match up the timeline. What did they actually study in this month versus what this guy, this talking head, said to us, the American public? What did they present to the FDA versus what they knew? This lawsuit is packed full of statements that either Pfizer released or Bourla himself said about what Pfizer knew, and a lot of them just don't add up. And he also, Texas Attorney General Paxton, says that many cases of COVID deaths and outbreaks happened amongst the vaccinated. We've covered this before. Now the CDC even admits that COVID vaccination is a risk factor for getting COVID. They've been admitting this since last summer, that if you've been vaccinated, you are more prone to get COVID and more severe COVID. Okay, this is just the first gauntlet thrown in a lawsuit. We know that that's, you know, it doesn't all have to stick. You sort of make your best case and then see what the courts will allow you to fight on. That's a big if, because remember that Pfizer had impressive immunity from the government around the COVID vaccine. So how can they be sued? Fraud. Fraud is the one thing that pierces the corporate veil. So we'll see if they can actually prove it. Will it be a disservice to all of us if they settle this? Yeah, right? I want to see it fought. I want to see it litigated because I want to see the discovery. I want Pfizer to have to put up these documents publicly because they are ordered to by a judge. I want that. I need that.
Hope that we get to actually read them without getting a copy or getting a strike on our channel.
Right.
Right.
They do come out.
Yeah. You may recall that in the summer of 2021, was that it? Yeah. Redacted. We read Pfizer's own clinical trials and we were punished with a channel strike that made us go dark for 2 weeks. Now, what the attorney general is seeking is just money. They want monetary relief in an amount greater than $1 million. Okay. I also would like to request an apology and also some kind of like, you can't do it this way ever again. I also would like the FDA to put in place real vaccine trials and actual federally mandated adverse events reporting. We don't have that. We absolutely should. So will we get any of that from this, or will Texas just get a monetary settlement because Pfizer doesn't want to fight this in court? If it were me, if I were Attorney General Paxton, I wouldn't settle for the moon. You got to try this. You got to take this and let us see what they knew and what they lied to us about. That's how I feel about it. Let me know how you feel about it in the chat.
One thing I do feel about it is that there, you know, 9 of the 10 former FDA heads of the FDA are, you know, now part of the biopharmaceutical complex and have left Scott, you know, Scott Gottlieb, formerly of the FDA, 83 days later goes and joins Pfizer's board.
Yeah.
Almost 9 out of the 10 FDA heads roll over and then have joined Johnson & Johnson, all of the major biopharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
From Pfizer. So they have a backdoor. They can pick up the phone. Mm-hmm. They know, like, this idea that there's not communication going on or that they're not communicating with them is garbage.
Right. No, they have these fancy hotel room meetings and decide, like, how am I going to, I would like to mention that we've started doing our book club, something that's part of the Redacted Plus membership that you can get at redacted.inc. I talked about this book, which I'd mentioned a couple months ago, which is called Turtles All the Way Down. It's written by doctors out of Israel who remained anonymous because vaccine science has become so polarized that they didn't want their names to be any part of the story. It is only a compendium of what we do and don't know about any vaccine. The COVID vaccine is not researched here. It's only mentioned as something that has increased and piqued interest. But it details how pretty much every vaccine trial has been presented in such a way to get the data that they want. And we almost never have real studies about vaccines. Why is that? We don't. So when we hear this, like, vaccines are safe and effective, we have no idea how they work together. We have no idea how they work with other medications you might be on. We have no idea at what age they work best. We have no idea any of that because we purposely will not study that. We also, though, then go around, we spend a lot of money. The FDA funds a lot of study to fund research on vaccine attitudes, on vaccine hesitancy. Now, why would we study that and not the true effects of the cumulative effects of vaccines? Just wondering. So join our book club if you'd like to see my take on that. And please do check out this book for yourself. It's amazing.
And what is also amazing, we've got some great new folks who've joined us here and become channel members, but also some nice super chats. Jade Pearson with a very kind super chat, $10 super chat, says, "Hey, I'm pretty new here. My husband brought me. I quickly realized the value of this channel and your newsletter is astronomical. Thank you for the research and the journalism that you do." Thank you, Jade. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Sneaky, Jade, and Jade's husband.
Sneaky Fox. With a $5 super chat. "The best way to get any type of infection or disease is to turn off your TV. The best way to not get any type of infection or disease is to turn off your TV." Oh my gosh. Yeah. Did you see all the Pfizer ads that are all over television?
Yeah.
I mean, with Kelsey, you know, from the Chiefs, he's like happily showing off his biceps with his blue bandage. Like, wait a minute, I can get two shots at once. I can get the flu vaccine and this. Yeah, he loves that. Marvin Vargas, thank you for your $2 super chat as well. Aesthetic, thank you from Vancouver. Nice to see you. Roger, thank you guys for your super chats. Really appreciate it. Brian Allen. Jay Savage says, "I have two words for you. Tucker Carlson." Greg Gutfeld said that the other night. Yes, he did say that. So thank you for all of your kind super chats tonight. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, we have more news to get to. We're going to give you an update from the COP28 climate conference out of Dubai.
Yeah, there's a lot of hypocrisy that we want to talk about, specifically about whether, like, these targets that they're pushing everyone towards, of course, with lowering greenhouse gas emissions, lowering the temperature by 1.5 degrees Celsius. Like, that's their big target. Otherwise, doomsday, right? We're going to absolutely collapse, and everything's going to collapse in the next few years if we don't do that. Everyone's going to die, is what they're telling us.
All right. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Nom Nom, because your pet is a member of the family, so don't feed them like they're in the doghouse. Give them Nom Nom. In fact, most research shows that when you give your dog processed food, they have a really high rate of disease. You don't want that for your sweet little pup. Nom Nom delivers freshly made dog food with every portion, personalized to your dog's needs so you can bring out their best. Nom Nom's made with real wholesome ingredients that you can see and recognize without any additives or fillers that contribute to bloating and low energy. That's because Nom Nom uses the latest science and insights to make real good food for dogs. Their nutrient-packed recipes are designed by board-certified veterinary nutritionists freshly made and shipped to your door. Nom Nom's already delivered over 40 million meals to good dogs like yours, inspiring millions of clean bowls and wagged tails. Plus, Nom Nom comes with a money-back guarantee. If your dog's tail isn't wagging within 30 days, Nom Nom will refund your orders. So there's no fillers, no nonsense, just Nom Nom. So right now, for 50% off your no-risk two-week trial, go to trynom.com/redacted. You see it there on your screen. That's trynom.com/redacted for 50% off for your pup. Maybe that could be a good stocking stuffer or a good Christmas gift for your pup. In our house, Grover does have a Christmas stocking. He gets bones and all those kind of fun things.
Kind of fun treats.
Ribs, that kind of stuff.
A bone wrapped in meat.
Yeah.
Some kind of a thing.
Yeah. Bacon. So this is a great Christmas gift for your little dog. Again, go to trynom.com/redacted.
Lately, he's been enjoying Grover. He loves these bones that I give him. They're because it's really good for his teeth, right?
The ones cleaning that are teeth. Wrapped in fish.
They're wrapped in fish. And so they're wrapped in like a dried fish, and he goes crazy for them. He loves them. Yeah. All natural good stuff there. All right. Let's talk about COP28. COP28, of course, the big climate conference in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. Thousands upon thousands of people descending on Dubai in order to cover the big climate conference there and talk and meet in the hallways and shake hands with Al Gore and, you know, do all of that. So I happen to be in Dubai, not for COP28 specifically, but had a chance to interact and talk with a lot of the people who were at the conference. And it's very interesting because a lot of the hotel staff, the folks at the airport who I was talking to were telling me that enormous amounts of people couldn't make it to COP28. There was enormous amounts of people that were stuck throughout Europe because of a massive snowstorm coming to the climate conference. 6 feet of snow, massive freeze, deep freeze as a result of it. And world worst cold snap in decades. Heavy snow brings chaos to southern Germany as Munich suspends flights. And of course, private jets. This is hilarious to watch. These private jets who they couldn't take off. So a lot of the COP28 private jets that were set to come there couldn't. So things had to be delayed. Conference schedules had to be adjusted as a result of it because of the deep freeze. And they were waiting on some of the hotel staff people, and folks were telling me that, yeah, they're waiting on all these people. They're just not, they haven't been able to get out, haven't been able to arrive because of the snowstorm. Because, you know, the earth is heating up so quickly. So this is a big problem. Exactly. Good question. Since when? That's the perfect question. If you've been watching our show for any length of time, you know the joke on that. Anyway, but one big thing that's sort of been like a big umbrella of weirdness that's unfolded over COP28 over the past few days in Dubai was this comment, or a series of comments, and then a doubling down of these comments by the president of COP28. The president of COP28, the UAE Sultan Al Jaber, was recorded on a Zoom call with Mary Robinson, of course, who's the former UN Irish. She's the Irish. What the hell is she?
Anybody? She was a former president.
She's a former Irish president.
Former Irish president, but yes, as part of the UN's climate convoy, garbage, whatever. Anyway, so she's been leading this effort, right? Her big thing is climate change is killing women specifically. Pregnant women and women and children specific, but it's really women that climate is really killing. So before COP28, she wanted to speak with COP28's president as they're gearing up for this. So they had a big Zoom meeting. After they'd met in Beijing, they agreed to do another meeting. He agrees to do this Zoom meeting with her once again to kind of talk about the agenda for COP28. And he basically flat out tells her, there is no science behind what you're asking me to do, which is to phase out fossil fuels, oil, natural gas, get rid of it. There's no science. Like, you're lying about it, and you're asking me to basically go out and lie about it for you, on your behalf, for your scam. So listen to this leaked Zoom that has now been released. The Guardian had it. But this leaked Zoom meeting has been like under the underbelly, the undercurrent of the COP28 meeting. So I'm going to play it. We're kind of pause. I'm going to play a little bit here, and we'll kind of talk about it as we go. Watch this.
Samson, I'm really pleased that you did accept the invitation that I extended to you when we were together in Beijing with the Friends of the Paris Agreement to take part in this summit. I think one urgent message has come through in the entire day of the summit. I've heard it at every session, I think, and that is that we're in an absolute crisis that is hurting women more than anyone, women and children, the elderly, those with disability, etc., and those most vulnerable. And it's because we have not yet committed to phasing out fossil fuel. That is the one decision that COP28 can take under your presidency. And in many ways, because you're head of the Abu Dhabi National Oil Company, you could actually take it with more credibility by saying, I now recognize we have to phase out fossil fuel with just transition for the workers and their communities and just transition into renewable, accessible, affordable clean energy. It's not going to happen overnight, as you say. It will be orderly but urgent. I didn't hear the word urgent enough in your voice when you spoke earlier. That's why I kind of interrupted.
That's very pedantic, isn't it?
What urgent means, a fast track is not good enough.
Fast track is, it can be more of a managerial term. Urgency is crisis.
Yeah, so I need you to say the word urgent over and over and over. You need to repeat it so people hear you saying urgent, urgent, urgent. You got to keep saying it. That's what she wants.
I love her telling him exactly what words to use. Like, right. I didn't think you were panicked enough, and I'd like to hear that out of your voice. It's very condescending.
Right. It's clearly from a woman who doesn't know, the real issues here and is not a businesswoman at all. But listen to his response.
Yeah, we can always play with words here. You are a good politician, and you know how to use words better than I do. I'm a businessman. I am centered around delivery and actions.
Well, will you lead on phasing out fossil fuel with just transition, as I've said.
You can take the lead. I'll make sure I put you as an item on the agenda, and I'll adopt it. Someone has to take the lead. You are a developed, you come from a developed country. Developed countries, I'm sure, can take the lead like they always do, and lead by example. You can lead by example. And like I said from the beginning, I accepted to come.
Because, here's the thing. The industrial world, you guys, you developed world, you love to boss other people around all the time. You love to tell others what to do, but then you fail to lead by example on whether it's humanitarian issues, whatever. But you guys should lead by example here. It'd be great, right?
To this meeting, to have a sober and a mature conversation. I'm not in any way signing up to any discussion that is alarmist. I am here factual, and I respect the science. And there is no science out there, or no scenario out there, that says that the phase out of fossil fuel is what's going to achieve 1.5. 1.5 is my North Star. And a phase down and a phase out of fossil fuel, in my view, is inevitable. It is essential, but we need to be real, serious, and pragmatic about it.
But the real serious and pragmatic doesn't take into account that we are in. I mean, I respect that you've done a lot of hard work preparing for this COP and that you've listened to the science. The science is very acute now. We don't have any time. They say 6 or 7 years. We've got to peak by 2025, latest in fossil fuel. Fossil fuel, and your company is investing in a lot more new fossil fuel. And that's going to hurt women.
Women.
Ma'am. you've just accused me of something that is not correct. I'm sorry, I don't take it. Now I ask you to prove to me.
I read that your company is investing in a lot more fossil fuel in the future.
Yes, ma'am, you're reading your own media, which is biased and wrong. I am telling you, I am the man in charge, and it is wrong, ma'am. You need to listen to me, please.
I'm very pleased to hear it.
It is wrong. You guys write a lie and you believe it. I'm sorry.
Your Irish media, you know, UK media, whatever, writes a lie and you believe it. It's your media that you're reading, which is lying to you. By the way, that it's terrible for women. Can we talk about the women who rely on fossil fuels in Africa, in hospital situations throughout Haiti and other places that rely on fossil fuels to be able to deliver babies, they don't have some sort of massive technological solar infrastructure with backup batteries and who knows what, wind and wind power and everything else. No, they rely on fossil fuels. If they don't have fossil fuels, they die. They die. And that's Michael Schellenberger writes about that in his book. Alex Epstein, excuse me, writes about that in his book, Fossil Future, and dives deeply into that, exactly how important that is and how actually when people use this canard that it's hurting women, when you actually remove fossil fuels, it actually hurts women more. But Mary Robinson doesn't want to hear that.
Not I accept can follow what I see.
I am not accepting this. I'm sorry. I respect you. And I do not accept any false accusations. I've been very clear about my position. This is wrong. And you're asking for a phase out of fossil fuel. Please help me, show me a roadmap for a phase out of fossil fuel that will allow for sustainable socioeconomic development. Unless you want to take the world back into caves.
No.
Show me.
Yeah, I think we can.
We have 8 billion.
Women will be part of that.
Give me the solution. You talk about having women be involved. We in this small country.
So then he goes
on. She says, I think we can. But that's not good enough. No. You've just lectured me on doing something you want me to do. But you think you can prove that with data? Like, hang on, let me ask Google Bard, because Google will come up with any kind of woke solution you ask it to. But you don't know? If you're going to lecture someone, you better have those numbers in your back pocket.
No, she has no data whatsoever. But then, by the way, he came out today and doubled down on that position at COP28 and made a speech in front of everyone. Yeah, there's no science. There's no science to support. So basically, the entire conference, you have all these people, we're going to get into some of the speeches here in a second, they're all there blowing gas. You know, they're all
literally
hot gas. And so they can just rub shoulders. Now, there's been some criticism saying, you know, the whole reason he was having this climate conference in Dubai is it's so he could make backroom oil deals with people. I hope so.
Go ahead.
I hope that that's the case. They said that, you know, that's an absolute lie. That's not the case. But I hope he is. I hope they're making big oil and natural gas deals so that we can get, you know, more access to fossil fuels.
Well, again, because most of the data, not because we love oil and gas, we do love people to wear warm coats that come from oil and gas.
Petroleum.
Right. We love for
shingles on your roof that are made from petroleum.
Well, we love to get antibiotics when our kids are sick that are shipped with fossil fuels. And also because the data clearly shows that any time people become more prosperous because of the advent of fossil fuels and the way that it allows prosperity to increase in their lives, their carbon footprint goes down. So, yeah, I'm for that. Go ahead, David.
And we can't forget those protective vests that the Just Stop Oil protesters wear to make them so that they're safe and can be seen in traffic.
Those are made with oil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your tires, Everything is made with oil, petroleum. So you can just walk around naked from now on, I guess. If you want to get rid of it, it's not just about powering your car. It's about everything in your house comes from there. Everything. Look around your kitchen. Everything comes from it. Everything. So, you know, this lecturing of other countries has a strong history, right? These lecturing of other countries that industrialized countries telling other countries, you know, you have to basically skip over the industrialization period that gave rise to prosperity and riches and wealth.
Right. Well, he mentions here that she says something like, well, we don't think you're going to have any kind of peak carbon output and then come down, which China just admitted last week that it had. And so this idea of lecturing other countries that you should not increase the quality of standard of living in your country as we did, you should skip that and just go to living off the earth and having no carbon footprint is a really racist thing to say. And it sort of overlooks the fact that most of our lives are better because of this actual peak. Here's what Michael Schellenberger said in his book about this, that the U.S. and Britain have seen their carbon emissions from electricity specifically decline by an astonishing 27% in the U.S. and 63% in the U.K. between 2007 and 2018. So our carbon carbon emissions in these developed places already peaked about 10 years ago. In fact, most energy experts believe emissions in developing nations will peak and decline just as they did in developed nations once they achieve a similar level of prosperity. This comes not from any climate babies, not from anybody gluing themselves with soup or glue or cement to any artwork or civilian infrastructure, not from any of that. It comes from technological progress.
Yeah.
By humans. We do it ourselves.
Yeah, and to your point, and then China's CO2 emissions may be falling already. Of course, we just talked about that last week. This was a big moment to say, oh, their emissions have already peaked now and coming down. So all of this crazy concern about China, are they doing enough in solar? Are they doing, and well, yeah, it turns out now they've peaked and now it's on its way back down. So now they're going to have all the climate alarmists are going to have, they're going to need a new bad boy to pick on, right? And actually digging into it, China uses more solar than any country in the world. So yeah, that's an interesting point to make. A lot of BS speeches from climate alarmists, though, happened in COP over the past few hours. In fact, I wanted to highlight just a few quick ones here with no evidence whatsoever. Hillary Clinton told the COP28 conference that extreme heat has killed 500 million people, most of them women and girls, but failed to cite any actual source. Watch this.
We're seeing and beginning to pay attention and to count and record the deaths that are related to climate, and by far the biggest killer is extreme heat. I mean, even in Europe last summer, which has the ability to count and figure out what happened, they recorded 61,000 deaths because of the heat in Europe. We don't have that kind of number yet from Africa, Asia, Latin America, but we know and estimate that we probably could measure about 500,000 deaths. And the majority of those are women and girls, and particularly pregnant women.
Oh, really? Okay.
Okay, look, bitch.
So,
did you know that for every one person that dies of heat, about seven die of cold?
Yeah, don't talk about the cold. We okay. only want to focus on the heat. They only want to talk about the heat. It's inconvenient for them to talk about the
and
cold.
And furthermore, elderly women are more likely to die of heat because, and women then are disproportionately affected because women live longer.
You know, what also sucks is when you're in Germany and you don't have any natural gas because Hillary's cronies blew up your Nord Stream pipeline. So it's a cold winter now in Europe. And sorry, we don't have natural gas. Or we're asking you in the UK and Germany and other parts across Europe, because we don't have natural gas, turn down your thermostats. Just wrap yourselves in additional blankets right now, even if you're elderly. Because, you know, we don't have natural gas and fossil fuels to be able to heat your homes. We blew up the Nord Stream pipeline.
But she literally just said in Africa, probably 500,000
No,
people
she
died.
Has zero evidence of it.
Right.
Zero evidence.
She said we don't have those numbers. But listen to the implicit racism in her statement, because she said Europe can count, but Africa can't.
No, I know that. I love that. Yeah, Europe can, you know, they know how
they
to count.
They know their numbers because they
know
can count.
Math. They
Africa,
have math.
Maybe I'll go there someday and teach them their ABCs and their 1, 2, 3s, but they're busy not counting right now. Like, who, what kind of elitist says that?
Yeah, more like people. They're just busy dying.
I mean, where?
Yeah, Philip, yeah,
like,
take it.
I'd like to point out that algebra, you know, and actually the symbols we use for our numbers, guess where that came from?
Ethiopia, right?
Africa. Just saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, various places in Africa, but that's where we got algebra.
Yeah.
That's where we got our actual Arabic numbers. But hey,
oh, they can count.
Africa?
Oh, they can count? Really? Oh. They're not stupid. Okay.
Well, yeah,
stupid. They,
kind of.
Apparently. You know what you can count actually is how many more people probably have been mysteriously committed suicide that were close to the Clintons that have been killed by climate change. As we've covered before on the show, 61,000 number that she threw out there, 61,000 extreme heat deaths figure is from Europe. It's taken from a study by the Barcelona Institute for Global Health, which is funded by Bill and Melinda Gates. So just FYI on that, if you're wondering where that source came from that she throws around that 61,000 number. Remember, the conspiracy that they would start charging you carbon taxes. Remember this? Oh, that's just a conspiracy theory. So your movement, if you drove too many miles this month, we're going to charge you an additional carbon tax based on your movement. And how, when this is tied to your digital ID and your CBDCs control everything, that's all a conspiracy theorist, right? Well, that's all a conspiracy theory, right? You guys are just conspiracy theorists over at Redacted. Oh, until COP28 comes around and they admit on stage exactly what we've been saying is coming. Here is the head of the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, admitting that, yeah, it's not a conspiracy. We support carbon purchases. We support carbon taxing you. Watch.
We are a huge proponent of carbon price. We believe that carbon price has the potential of raising revenues in a way that is both equitable, because the more you consume, the more you pollute, the more you pay. And it is also an incentive to accelerate decarbonization. In other words, you would need less money because of consumption and production adapting to it.
Oh, okay. So guess it wasn't a conspiracy after all. In fact, she wasn't the only one today that said it. In fact, Bill Gates managed to fly his private jet in to the carbon conference, to the COP28 conference in Dubai, and remind us that he also is pushing for this carbon tax. Listen to Bill Gates.
And in fact, a carbon tax over time should be put on so that the new, you know, say the electric car or the plane that use hydrogen, the fact it doesn't emit carbon, you're helping it get adoption.
Oh, okay. So the hydrogen-powered airplane, which I'm sure, by the way, I would love to know if he flew a hydrogen-powered airplane to the COP28 conference. I would love to know if he drives electric cars. Chances are probably not. And so
did he come in a Zeppelin?
I don't know. We will charge you these carbon taxes because you want to use fossil fuels. If you want to use gas in your gas-guzzling car, then we will charge you an additional carbon tax, and it'll be tied to your digital ID. We will know and be able to track you. And what is your carbon footprint? Some banks now, if you log in, they will tell you at the top of your statements, what is your carbon footprint? How many of you noticed this with some of the big banks out there? How many of you have, you know, logged in your bank and looked at your statement and saw at the top, you can now see your carbon footprint? You can sign up for that. In fact, they may even do it for free now within one of your accounts. They're already cataloging it. So they track every purchase you make, how you spend your money based on those purchases and how you arrived at those locations. They're telling you what your carbon footprint is. Oh, okay. So if you get some sort of a government assistance or you get some sort of social, I mean, who knows how they would tap into this to tell you you don't have access to these funds. I mean, there's a deep rabbit hole we can go down, but we're already seeing the groundwork being laid for this.
Yeah.
All of these stakeholders, these guys who are running these conferences, who are there and who are shaking hands and backroom deals, these big bankers and Vanguard and BlackRock and all of these guys that put all of this stuff together. It's not a conspiracy. It's happening right now. But these I just love the dual stories coming out of COP28. It was interesting to see.
I can't believe she said that Africans can't count. Like, I can't get over that one.
Yeah.
Well, I can count. And one thing I can't, I can, like, you know, that if they implement this like individual carbon tax, it's not going to be based on a percentage of your net worth. Because if it was, then maybe some of these people would stop flying around in their damn private jets.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a flat number, which means it's not going to affect them. It's sort of like, you know, traffic tickets, where if a traffic ticket is a certain amount of money, it's just a poor tax. Because a rich person, they don't care about these financial penalties.
Yeah.
So it's like they'll pay it. If it's, you know, like $100, if you go over a certain amount, they don't care. They'll still fly their private jets. But then we can't drive to work. We can't go get groceries because we can't afford it.
Yeah.
That's really good math, Philip. He must not be African.
Yeah. And also I wonder too if there would be reparations. Can you imagine there'd be calls for carbon reparations?
Oh, there are already.
Like your company has done this for 20 years. Like, we're going to bring a reparations lawsuit for your carbon destruction or something.
Yeah.
I'm sure that that's probably next. There'll be reparations for that.
Right. All right. Well, let us know what you think of this in the chat. We're going to continue to follow this conference as it unfolds this weekend, because even the mainstream media is covering it as if it is the Messiah that is coming to save us from impending doom. So even just today, Clayton and I were walking through a store and we saw Al Gore
on the TV.
TVs, and like, oh, there's that guy.
And I was like, presenting. I was like, who's that old guy? It looks like Al Gore. I was like, oh, it is Al
Gore. It is Al Gore.
Yeah, so. But I just love the two different stories kind of coming out of this conference. You know, you have the Sultan telling these people that there's no science about it. Yeah. He's leading the conference and they're all like, oh, okay. And all right. Thank you, Sultan, for that warm introduction. The first conference today is about how women are dying from climate change. Hillary Clinton, come on up to the stage. You know, just after the president just told us that this is all fake and there's no science behind it. I love it. Super cool. All right. What was I going to say? Oh, yes. I want to tell you about our store before we get out of here. We have a redacted store, and we've got a lot of great stuff in there for the holidays. And so new merch available now, because God knows we only have a few more shopping days left until Christmas. And to get your orders in and get them shipped out and everything and all of that goodness. So, you know, everything has to be printed and made fresh just for you. It's like going to Shake Shack and getting a fresh burger just for you. That's the way we do it at the Redacted store. Your order comes in, and then, you know, then Natalie gets out the sewing kit and she makes it for you from scratch.
From fossil fuels.
From fossil fuels. Exactly.
From whatever we're not supposed to be using.
Yeah, whatever we can't be using.
Fur or whatever. We don't use anything like that. So please check out that, plus our non-pacifist peace extremist merchandise
mugs,
to prove to
stickers.
The world that you stand for peace. That's my favorite. We have we have posters, we have stickers, all that kind of stuff. So check it out. Please head on over to redactedstore.com. And if you get this under your tree from Santa, I want to know about it, because I have a feeling Santa will be delivering these things as well. So let us know about all of that and more. You can find us on any of the platforms. You know how to find us, and we always enjoy seeing that. Thank you so much for joining us today. We will be back tomorrow, same time. It's 4 p.m. Eastern, and please subscribe to the newsletter, because you'll get those stories in the morning. We will talk about them in the afternoon. We appreciate you being here. Thank you so much, everybody. It's great to see you. Have a great night.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.